here from Paris Cooling, from QP3903.
It's becoming a fairly common observation these days that the anti-globalization movement is not linked effectively enough to community-based struggles, and that's a point that Jagi made on Saturday. That's a point that many of us have been talking about in our communities, in our organizations, that a gap exists between the summit hopping, serial protesting, disruptions of major meetings, of global capitalists and their political allies on the one hand, and the local day-to-day struggles in our communities, in poor communities, in Aboriginal communities, in communities of color on the other hand. So on Saturday, when I was in one of the workshops at the Rebuilding the Left Forum, it was a building labor solidarity across between North and South, I was really surprised and saddened when someone told me that they didn't think that the OCAP fall campaign was relevant to the discussion. But since we are talking about labor solidarity between the North and South, building labor solidarity, that somehow this local campaign in the city of Toronto was not relevant to this discussion, and that it somehow didn't really fit in with the topic at hand. And it seems to me that it's important then to maybe do a better job of trying to outline the links, making those links between why that fits. We have a situation in communities of color where they are the targets of racist immigration laws and deportations. And yet national and international capital does everything it can to keep wages low and then turns around and relies on this cheap labor pool to make huge profits for itself nationally and internationally. There's an estimated 2,000 evictions that happen each month due to huge cuts in welfare payments due to deregulation and changes to various acts, legislative acts. All because it is profitable to build condominiums and not affordable housing. So how can we talk of labor solidarity between North and South if we're unwilling and unable to address issues of poverty, of racism, homelessness, low wages in our own city? So I really think it's important to stress that the OCAP fall campaign of economic and political disruption presents us with a unique opportunity to unite together and fight back in our own communities on a local level, and to link and weave all these local actions and struggles into a wave of protest, into a tapestry of actions, you might say. The fall OCAP actions can act as a means to focus a mass convergence of workers, of students, of unions, First Nations, global justice activists, feminist organizations, environmental groups, and many other struggles against the Tory government and the corporate interests they serve. So poverty, what I'm trying to say is poverty, low minimum wages, changes to Employment Standards Act, all the things, all the litany of woes, to borrow a phrase from John Clark, and as Stefan just pointed out, this litany of woes, this is all the face of capitalist globalization. And both globalization in general and the Tory government and its allies in particular have launched a frontal assault on our communities. So what we see internationally, we're seeing here in our own backyard, and we have to fight it on every level, on several different fronts. You know, Stefan went through a whole bunch of all the different aspects of the neoliberal agenda which advances global capitalism. And the struggles against these proposed acts and legislative changes are part of struggles internationally and nationally to resist global capitalism and the race to the bottom. So we need to educate ourselves about struggles that are happening internationally throughout the world and to make sure that we act on a local level to fight against this assault, this frontal assault on our communities. It would be absolutely irresponsible to give in and let them steamroll us over. During our strike at York University this past fall and winter, we learned that good arguments don't matter a bit. It doesn't matter what you say at the bargaining table. You can have all the good arguments in the world. It's about power. It's about power. We gradually learned that if we didn't stand up to the employer in a very militant way, we would lose everything that we had fought for. It was a strategy that we developed because we had to develop it. Otherwise, we would get toasted. It was born out of the realization that rituals of token protest, symbolic protest, were completely ineffectual, at least at this point in history. So escalate and diversify became the strategy we had to adopt. Our orientation toward our adversary, this had to be one where we, out of necessity, had to disrupt the normal functions of their operations as much as we could, whenever we could. Only by raising the social costs to elites, only by doing this can we get their attention and hope to turn the tide. Raising social costs such that it is easier for elites to give into us than it is to continue fighting us. But militancy can only be sustained if there's genuine rank and file participation and ownership over decision-making processes. Input that has a real effect on the outcome, that one's involvement actually makes a difference. Militancy without rank and file participation, in my case, since I'm part of a union, rank and file union participation, militancy without this union participation won't be able to sustain itself over the long run. So you need both. Well, you need more, but I'll get to that. Rank and file participation is strengthened through solidarity with other organizations. So I'm talking about rank and file participation, militancy, and solidarity. So labor is potentially can potentially be a very radical force. It isn't always, as we know, but it can be. And thus we need to entrench and build in mechanisms which foster and facilitate more dialogue, mutual work, and solidarity between different segments of society, between segments such as the labor movement and the radical anti-capitalist or anti-globalization movement. We're starting to realize that sometimes these movements tend to diverge and aren't always connected in the most in the best and useful way, that we need to connect people up with unions, people who are previously identified little with and are unfamiliar with working class politics, connect them up to what unions are doing, the history of unions, get them involved, get them participating. This situation is also coupled with another situation whereby labor activists are not coming into contact with anti-capitalist ideas as much as they could and should, and more militant forms of direct action, which is not helped at all by the fact that some unions, many unions, tend to operate in a bureaucratic top-down fashion and therefore encourages passive forms of resistance rather than active and militant forms of resistance. I think it's important that the labor movement not pass judgments and try not to be hypocritical. We need to work together. Whatever arguments and issues we might want to take up within our organizations, do not publicly condemn other organizations and other tactics. We need to be tolerant. We need to be mutually respectful.
Then why exclude the Trotskyists?
Well, maybe we can get to that later. But in the meantime,
Adam, you'll have a chance in the discussion.
We need to be tolerant, mutually respectful, don't police our own members. I think that's really important. We need to try to foster as much as possible an anti-capitalist analysis, an internationalist analysis, try to foster ways of doing anti-racist work and building in an anti-racist feminist analysis, reorient union activity away from a preoccupation with servicing its members and emphasizing organizing its members. Once you get something in terms of bargain for something and get it, it's absolutely imperative to socialize it. What I mean by that is share it. The only way to keep it is to pass it on to others and thus narrow the gap between what you're able to get and what others have at the moment. Unions are lucky to have financial resources at their disposal, so they need to use those to help build solidarity, make the links between organizations. Flying squads are essential here. I believe that they're a wonderful mechanism which facilitates member participation, which facilitates solidarity, militant forms of action. Strikes are one kind of direct action that flying squads can help with. Other types of actions are helping out with like stopping deportations, stopping evictions, that kind of thing and so forth. All these are ways of countering passivity that has arisen due to the sense that there is no alternative, that our collective participation can make a difference, but we need to work together to make that happen. And flying squads, a group of people who get together to disrupt the normal operations of a workplace or disrupt the normal operations of a company or of an international institution, economic institution, we need to foster building those in our organizations, and we're seeing them sprout up all over the place. And I think they're a wonderful thing because in many ways they can build, like I said, militancy, rank and file participation, solidarity. It was great to be at a QP Ontario convention a month or so ago and hear some comments made by the president, national president of QP Ontario. She argued for taking the struggle to a whole new level, to go on the offensive like never before, mobilize the broadest coalitions, engage in civil disobedience and direct action. And this was very inspiring to hear that finally a broad labor movement who has been somewhat passive, but not always passive, but somewhat passive, is starting to wake up and go on the frontal assault ourselves. So I think it's important to build on the momentum created thus far that's building in this province, draw on the revitalized and renewed energy of resistance, and direct it towards launching just the kind of disruptive campaign and popular mobilization that offers a chance to turn the tide in this province. Thanks.